Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, we're live in Madison, Wisconsin at the Broadcasters Clinic. It's a great event, and I've got some terrific guests here. They're going to talk about what's new, what's hot, and have a tip of the week. It's all coming up on This Week in Radio Tech.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by BSW Broadcast Supply Worldwide and the Vivid Voice Sale. Choose from five professional voiceover packages designed by Joseph Riano. By the Telos VX VoIP talk show system, now used by local and network television broadcasters to streamline workflows and provide perfect communication with remote crews. And by the new Ruby console from Lavvo, with AutoMix smart mixing and a context-sensitive user interface. See Lavvo in your future at lavvo.com/work.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack. Delighted to be here. And look where I am. We're live on location on a special edition of This Week in Radio Tech. It's a Tuesday, not our usual Thursday, because we're here. We're in Madison, Wisconsin at an annual event that is beloved by engineers all over the place. It's the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association Engineering Clinic. Broadcasters Clinic. Okay. Yeah. But there are a lot of engineers here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mostly engineers.
Mostly engineers. All right. So, hey, Chris Tobin is off on assignment. Couldn't be with us today. He'll be back hopefully next week when we do. Actually, you know what? Next week, we're not doing it on Thursday either. We're doing TWRT, I believe, on Friday next week due to some scheduling issues. So we'll see how that goes. I'll keep you updated. If you just go to Facebook and find This Week in Radio Tech, TWRT, and make us your friend there. Follow us there. You'll be up to date. And there you go. All right. So let's jump into the program. I'll tell you what's going to happen. We've got a number of engineers here, broadcast engineers from all walks of life, all walks of broadcasting engineering life. We're going to talk to them, find out what's on their minds and what's exciting in their world. I will tell you that our sponsors are Broadcast Supply Worldwide, also the Telos Alliance and Lavvo. We'll be hearing from them as we move along through the show. And let's start out and introduce a couple of our guests right now. Steve Lampen is here from Belden. Hey, Steve, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for being here. It's always good to see you. You are doing something here at the show.
I'm talking about 12 gig video, which has no connection to TWRT at all.
Well, you know, but radio engineers are getting called upon more and more to do video. I'm not sure they need 12 gig video yet, but give us a little overview. What is 12 gig video?
Well, really, it's simply high resolution, high bandwidth video, and people thought it couldn't be done on coax, and I'm talking about how we have made a whole bunch of coaxes now, different sizes, to do 12 gigahertz distances.
Is it 12 gigabits or gigahertz?
No,
what is it?
12 gigahertz bandwidth.
Oh wow.
What they would call 4K.
Okay.
In resolution. Most people call it 4K. You go buy a 4K TV and a 4K camera.
Now the coax you're talking about? There's so much talk about IP here. Is this carrying RF or IP or what? What are you carrying over this coax?
The actual video signal itself.
Oh, the baseband video.
The baseband video.
Holy cow!
Exactly. Uncompressed is 12 gig.
But isn't it bits? Like it's an AES format? Or SMPTE format?
Yeah, but all cables are analog.
Yeah.
There is nothing but analog.
You're right.
So that's how it's described, is by the bandwidth on the cable itself.
Wow. We're going to do a break in a minute, but can you stick around and tell us a bit more about this cable?
I can.
Okay. I'd like to hear about it. And Noah, no, tell me your last name, Noah. How do you say it?
Shalaya.
Shalaya. Noah Shalaya. Wow. And you are an IT guy.
I am. I started, I have a passion for Linux and open source technology.
All right.
And basically, I started an IT company. We were actually one of the first podcasts to ever do a live video production entirely on Linux Fest Northwest out in Seattle.
Okay.
And essentially, a small LPFM group approached me and said, hey, that Noah guy, he kind of thinks out of the box, and I think his company finds those creative solutions that can cut costs. I wonder if he could help us get a station on the air for just a couple of $1,000s. And we were able to do that. And the problem is, though, Kirk, is I don't have a lot of experience in the broadcast world.
Uh-huh.
And here I am working for this LPFM and doing a weekly talk show. And so I thought, what better way to learn more than to come to a conference and hang out with you guys who know more than young Babylon here.
You're going down instead of going up.
Well, I don't know about that. If we learn something on the way down, that's okay.
All right.
So I got to know Noah over the past couple of hours. We've been talking about audio over IP and some of the things that it does. And I think you've had a bit of a reaction of serendipity, like, oh, it does that? That's just right. Part of what it does?
Right. Every time I turn around, I find something else. And it's like, oh, that is possible.
Well, think of a question or two, because we'll have some engineers here to answer. And Chris Tarr may join us if we can talk him into it in just a few minutes. Hey, our show This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by our friends at Broadcast Supply Worldwide. And let's take a look at the webpage for Broadcast Supply Worldwide, if we could. They're having their very sporting specials right now. And you can get great deals on a number of things, like their powerful portable codec from Comrex. It's the new Comrex Axis NX. It's really a revolutionary redesign of their popular IP audio codec. I got to talk to Tom Hartnett about this codec. He's really pumped about it. They've got a winner here for doing live remote broadcasts. So check that out, the Comrex Axis NX. Call BSW USA or go online. Find out more about it. Another great deal is the headsets that we're using right now. It is the Audio-Technica BPHS. I don't know why they give them so many letters. The BPHS-1 headsets. You get three of them for the price of two. That's almost as good a deal as I got. Actually, that is a good deal as I got. So I bought four of them. But you can get a three-pack for the price of two. Other good deals, the new Comrex Opal IP Audio Gateway. Now, this is a device that sits at your station, and if you got a VIP guest who's going to be on a show, you just send them a link. All they have to do on their smartphone, Android or iOS 11, they just click the link, it opens their browser, it turns on their microphone, it asks permission first, and it connects them with high-quality audio to your radio station. No more phone line audio, no more fumbling around to install this app or that app. They just click a link, and it works. It's the Comrex Opal IP audio codec. And hey, if you want to add video to your sports broadcast, your sports radio broadcast, check out the HDV Mixer from BSWUSA.com. They have packages all different sizes. Call them and talk about the different packages they have. Some of them come with a laptop. They come with the cameras and the cabling. And did you add graphics, do lower thirds, and add that video live streaming to your sports broadcast? It's really awesome, and you can certainly up your spot price for adding video to your broadcast. Lots of cool things at BSWUSA.com, and here's what you do. You go to their website, and you order by 7 p.m. Eastern time, and if you need it overnight, chances are they can get it to you. Why? Well, even though their offices are on the West Coast in Tacoma, Washington, their big warehouse is in Columbus, Ohio, and it's right next door to UPS and the Columbus Airport. So if you need something that they've got in stock, and they have just about everything in stock, just give them a call or order online. Tell them you want it overnight or 2-day, whatever you want to pay for on the shipping, and whatever your need is. Like me, you forget it about it the last minute, and they'll ship it to you as fast as overnight. You can have it even the next morning in many parts of the country. BSWUSA.com. Broadcast Supply Worldwide. Thanks a lot, BSW, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, Joe, you're hanging around for a minute. I'm going to let Steve here talk a bit more about cable, and then maybe you have a cable question too, because you've done a lot of IT. You know all about...
I've run some cable in my
You've run some cable. Steve, the 12 gigahertz
yes.
coax.
Well, now, the speech I'm giving tomorrow, the presentation tomorrow, really starts with fiber, which is where most people think they're going, that's the only choice they have.
Yeah.
But then they have twisted pairs as well, which will also do 10 gig. It won't quite do 12 gig until we get to category 8, which is another whole subject.
Mm.
But the point is, those are still alive and kicking, and people thought coax was dead. And in fact, I've spoken for quite a few years about things where people think coax is dead, and it's not dead by a long shot. The question is, so I haven't solved their problem of which thing to choose. You still have the same three choices you've always had.
Yeah.
And the question is, which way you want to go? And the interesting thing is that what really pushed us to do this was the fact that there was a petition that was sent to Grass Valley, which is a company we own, saying, please do not kill coax.
Oh.
And we were noticing, and they thought, I think Grass Valley thought we put them up to it. We had absolutely nothing to do with it at all. We didn't even know about it. But it was all these integrators and networks and people who have used coax for the last 50 years thinking, oh, my God, the thing I love is going to go away. Well, not anytime soon. But That doesn't mean it won't go away. It's just a question of when.
So this 12 gig coax,
yes.
I like to hear about its physical properties, but you know, also
you wouldn't be able to tell the difference between that and any other coax.
Really? Except it does 12 gig.
Yeah, exactly. It's written on the outside, but what's inside is very, very, very different.
Oh, okay. So, what about the connectors? What are you, BNCs?
We have actually made it exactly the same size as its predecessor cables. So it can take the same connectors. And so when we work on connectors, you can use our existing connectors, but if you want to go 12 gig, you could go to better connectors as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole point is we have specifically gone with exactly the same dimensions as before.
And this would this imply that manufacturers who are going to have ports, I guess BNCs,
yes,
that take 12 gig, they've got to be a little bit careful on the inside of their box too.
Yes. Oh, very.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Maybe even more careful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you're talking about printed circuit boards with traces on them. The spacing between the traces has to be super, super accurate now.
Yeah.
You know, because we're talking about wavelengths, microscopic little wavelengths between them. So,
I'm a radio guy, but when I go into a TV station and look at behind the racks, it's coax everywhere. TV guys love coax.
Well, that's
coax.
What I'm saying. So somebody said coax is dead or dying, and people freaked out.
Uh-huh.
And this is why we have now given you the same three choices you've always had.
This is why I love this country, because you can thank
so many choices.
Yeah, fiber, twisted pair coming, or coax.
Twisted pair is already here, but we only go up to 10 gig.
And so what?
On
and,
twisted pair,
and that's
currently.
With Cat 8.
No, that's Cat 6.
Oh,
that's 6A.
Oh, 6A. Okay.
Which you talked about in the last show. Remember, I talked about 10 GXS, our new 6A.
Mm-hmm.
That's as high as you can normally go in the U.S. There's Cat 7 in Europe, which we'll never see here. Not commonly, because it's really hard to work with.
Oh,
but Cat 8 is a whole different kettle of fish. I mean, it's 25 gig or 40 gig.
What?
Yeah. But here's the kicker. It'll only go 100 feet, 30 meters. And people say, oh, it's fine if you have, you know, a data center, 30 meters does 90% of what you want to do, and the rest of you can do on fiber if you have to. But, you know, for a broadcaster, I don't know.
Wow.
30 meters.
Future-proof wise, wouldn't you be better off actually running the fiber? Because then you can just change out, you know, the...
Sure, except that the conversion from electrons to photons and back again at the end is where all the expenses... The fiber is cheap.
Sure.
In fact, the fiber costs less than the coax or the twisted pair we just talked about.
It's the transceivers that you have to purchase.
It's the conversion. Now, as soon as they come out, what you need to do is invent a new chip that works with photons, that's a photonic amplifier, a photonic splitter, or something like that, that actually does stuff in the photonic world.
Sure.
First of all, you'd be the world's first trillionaire.
Yeah. Okay?
And you'd collect the Nobel Prize along the way. Mm-hmm. Okay. But that would completely change the architecture of the world as we know it. And the thing is also, I'm only talking about three technologies. There are other technologies coming down the pike, which will blow all this away, which only a few people are aware of. You should have me back on your show some other time. I'll talk about the future of the future.
I'm not having you on the show until you can tell me without having to kill me.
Oh, I can tell you without having to kill
okay.
you right now.
All right.
I mean, I'll tell you, the first thing that's coming, and it's very soon, but I can't give you a date, is carbon nanotubes, which are stronger than steel and lower resistance than any metal. And resistance equals bandwidth. When you have low resistance, you have wide bandwidth.
Okay.
So here I have a cable I'm going to make. I don't know what it looks like. I don't know what format it's going to be in. I have been told by the engineers at Belden, not ready for prime time. Okay? That's their answer. So clearly we're looking at this stuff, but it's not ready for prime time.
So someday I'll order carbon nanotube cable from Belden.
That's correct. Exactly.
And sometime after that, when it becomes commoditized, I'll go to Home Depot and buy carbon nanotube.
By which time we'll have the next thing out, which is room temperature superconductors.
Oh.
Infinite bandwidth. Bandwidth limited only by the boxes at the end because there's no resistance in the cable. And you can go from here to Sri Lanka and back again. And what you put in one end comes out the other end, pristine, untouched. And when that happens, the entire world that we know it will have changed.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, and that's just two technologies that don't exist yet, you can't buy. No part numbers. Don't put it in our system.
Don't Google it yet.
Yeah, don't Google it yet. Not there. But you can Google it. You can Google carbon nanotubes. You get all sorts of stuff because they're clearly doing a lot of research on it. I saw a picture the other day of the first cable, not ours, at least I don't think it was ours, hard to say, that was made with carbon nanotubes. So I know what things are possible, maybe.
Wow. You're blowing my mind.
Yeah. That is awesome. But now I'm way off the subject of what I'm talking about here. So.
Well, and so you are giving a talk here about the 12 gigahertz.
12 gigahertz choices.
Yeah.
I talk about fiber. I talked about twisted pairs. And then I spend most of my time talking about coax, which everybody thought was dead.
Now, if it's too late now for you to register for this show, but next year you need to sign up because Steve Lampen speaks every year.
Well, yeah. And the thing is, they really should come to this show. This is one of the best local regional shows there is.
Yeah.
And which is why I'm here every year. In fact, there's another show out in L.A., which I'm not going to because I want to be here instead. So This is a really, really good show.
Any chance you'll be at AES?
I certainly will. I'll be speaking three times at AES.
Oh, my gosh. And so I'm only speaking once.
You want to talk about audio? Well, you're speaking twice here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. See, I'm fighting you.
No, we're working together.
All right.
This is awesome. Steve, thanks so much for showing up.
My pleasure.
I appreciate it very, very much.
All right.
And we're gonna chat with Noah for a few minutes. And then, Chris Tarr, are you available? Okay. Because Noah may have a question or two that would apply to you. So Noah here, our newfound IT friend, is learning about audio over IP and building. He built a radio station already, but he's learning about audio over IP. Mm-hmm. And so I've been in your boat before. Mm-hmm. I wish I knew what you know about Linux, because there's a lot of cool stuff I think I could do with Linux.
Sure.
So I'm know enough. And Chris Tarr is pretty much an expert in audio over IP as well. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
Welcome.
I'm back.
What's this nuts and bolts ticket? What's that?
Oh, that's a great session we have tonight.
Oh.
And it's kind of like a War Stories episode, but with a lot of the attendees here at the program. I've been coming to the Broadcasters Clinic now for 15 years. And the nuts and bolts session is usually the highlight for just about everybody here because it's very informal, kind of a roundtable thing. Usually, involves some alcoholic beverages, and it's a good time.
Cool. That's tonight.
That's tonight.
Okay, I'll see if I can make it. Now, Noah was asking us some questions before the show started, and I think Noah is at a point where more engineers are. They got us their start in IT. They know a lot of clever things, good practices, best practices, maybe what we would consider tricks, like, ooh, how'd you do that? But he needs to learn about moving audio around in that IP world with which he's already familiar. And you two are having a great conversation about this. You've been in that boat yourself.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Let me give you some background. So basically what we have, because most radio stations operate in that you have the studio, and the studio takes the audio, sends it to the transmitter site, and then kind of hanging off the end is this streamer that goes out to the internet, right?
Sure.
And that's kind of the traditional way we go about it. And the interesting thing, because I came from this IT background, they brought me in. I said, I'm going to reverse that process just a little bit. We're going to concentrate on sending the IP, keeping the IP digital, sending the IP as a stream, and then the transmitter site basically hangs off of that.
Of that.
So we have a radio station in a cloud, essentially, because the automation system is on a hosted VPS. And so what I was speaking to Kirk about and what I'd like to talk to you about is some of the different ways that we can take that radio station and bring the quality up a little bit. I'll give you an example. So, for example, at the transmitter location, be really nice to use something like the ZIP stream. Would it be possible to take something like that and receive an IceCast IceCast PCM stream and just play and use that as the feed to the transmitter?
Sure. Well, I mean, you could do it that way. You could use two of the ZIP ones.
Okay.
And what's great about those is they speak native LiveWire. Mm-hmm. So on your LiveWire network at the studio, it will never make a conversion. It will stay in the live wire realm the entire time.
Right.
And then on the other end, you can take it out live wire. You can take it out any number of ways. I did that with Radio Milwaukee. In Milwaukee, when we built their facility, I used a T1 and used a ZIP1 as an STL to get the audio from my live wire studio out to the transmitter site. So it worked exceptionally well for that.
Now, excuse my ignorance.
Let's pull back. Yeah, the camera's getting lonely here.
The ZIP stream, is that a separate product from the ZIP1?
Yes, it's a rack mount box. And what I hear you saying, though, is you've got your automation is hosted somewhere in a cloud.
Right. We receive that as
a stream. May or may not have access to put another piece of hardware there at that location.
Exactly.
So here's what I'm thinking, Chris. This is actually the next step along. The folks at my colleagues at Omnia have a new product called Omnia SST, and I'm sure others will have similar things too. So it's an audio processor that runs in a Windows platform.
Okay.
And who knows, maybe eventually it'll be Linux as well, but right now it's Windows. Mm-hmm. So you run that in the cloud as well.
Okay.
And it's an FM processor. So it would take the output of your automation system, whatever the same thing is that also goes to your stream.
Gotcha.
But this is prior to encoding for streaming. You're going to take the linear output of your automation while it's still bit for bit good stuff in that PC or in another PC right next to it.
Yep.
You're going to go into this box, this PC that's running an FM audio processor.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the problem, and here's what we've solved.
Mm-hmm.
An FM transmitter typically is best fed with what's called a multiplex or a baseband signal.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the output of a stereo generator. So it's the left plus right, the stereo pilot, the left minus right, the RDS.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you're doing HD stuff on top of that. And if there was a way.
If only there was a way.
There's more. Because a stereo generator made by my employer, Omnia, or made by Orbin, or made by Wheat, by Vorsys, that's the signal you really want because it's good.
Sure.
It's really good. The problem is to carry it linearly takes a lot of bandwidth.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard anywhere, some people have as low as 2 megabits per second. Other people, it's 12 megabits per second, and that's without any error correction. That's just straight.
Sure.
And that's a lot of bandwidth. And of course, any glitch in that is going to result in missing audio. There's a lot there. Well, my friend Hans von Zutphen at Omnia has developed an interesting codec to take the multiplex signal, transport it over IP at 384 kilobits per second.
Wow.
So like 4 VoIP phone calls.
Yeah.
You know, the bandwidth of 4 phone lines.
Mm-hmm.
And there's error correction available, too, in that. And at the transmitter end, you can right now you can decode it with as little as a Raspberry Pi, or better yet, a PC, and the output of that comes out of a high quality sound card that'll do 192 kilohertz sampling, and then go analog into your transmitter or AES digital into your transmitter with that full baseband signal.
Now, what about using a zip stream to decode that signal?
Well, the idea here is you don't need to, see part of your idea here is you want to run in the cloud fully. And right now the Zip One, for example, that codec is not available as a piece of software. It's a piece of hardware.
Gotcha.
Now Zip Stream is just our encoding software. You can encode several different standard codecs, typically the AAC family.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the highest you can do would be about 384 kilobits per second AAC. Now the Zip Stream, if you could put a hardware one, you can do PCM.
Right. Now,
okay. Go ahead.
To take this a step further,
yeah.
The other issue you have on the other end is you need to convert whatever audio you'd be getting from your stream into composite into your transmitter, either with a processor there or, you know, for example, I know for sure Nautel, I think some of the other manufacturers are doing it now, actually have a streaming client built in with processing and everything else.
Yes.
So, for example, what I use for a backup emergency audio system if my STL fails is I have a Shoutcast server running at my studio.
Gotcha.
And if the STL, the 900 megahertz link goes down, my Nautel transmitter can connect itself to the to the streaming server running Hans's audio processing there, and then the stereo pilot is generated at the transmitter, inside of the transmitter. Most modern exciters are able to take discrete left and right and put a stereo pilot on it. So,
yeah.
You know, that's one way. You know, I'm real excited about MPX over IP for those reasons.
Thank you. I couldn't think of that.
Yeah.
So it's in multiplex MPX, that signal that has the baseband over IP. And I'm glad. Now, there's a reason, though, that you don't use what you use for a backup. There's a reason you don't use that full time. What's that reason?
Well, there's not really a reason. You could do that.
You could use it full time, but the audio quality is better.
You're running it over the internet.
Yeah,
so
okay. Yeah.
That's reason number one. So, now, you could do that full time if you wanted to.
Let me just point out one of the things that originally drew us to this is that, you know, everyone has the internet as this commodity that may or may not be available. Reality is, we have so many different ways to get internet to a given box. So at our transmitter site, we have a fiber link to the ISP.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a backup DSL and a little 4.
I know of stations that do full-time internet using redundant links like that and have no problem at all.
Right.
So that certainly is an option. And, you know, to an extent, in my case where I didn't use the Zip Stream, I used the Zip One, which is just its own codec to codec.
Yes.
Connection.
Mm-hmm.
I did that over a T1 link, and it worked just fine. So, you know, there are ways to do that. And, you know, and you're right. I have run stations over the public internet using, you know, multiple connections.
Sure.
And that way, if one goes down, it just rolls over to the next.
Right.
Or it's just, as I like to say to some of the clients that do that, what's your tolerance for pain?
Right.
So,
yeah,
you know, if you don't mind a quick dropout, is it over or whatever, then it's a very affordable way to do that.
You're,
and you can get into those tricks.
You're a fan of Microtech routers, right?
Sure, yeah.
So one of the nice things about Microtech routers is that you can feed it two internet connections and tell it, just pull in. So the audio drop, if any, is like bloop, and it, you know, and it, because the connection is persistent on each one of the connections.
We have a friend in Florida, Dave Anderson.
Yes.
He has a network of something like 17 FM transmitters. Mm-hmm. Some are full power, some are translators. And he's using Telos Zip 1s between his studio and each transmitter site.
Okay. Yep.
And he runs them at different bit rates depending upon what internet is available. But at every site, he makes sure he gets two sources of internet.
Right.
One of them may be a 4G MiFi, which only gets turned on if it's needed, so it's not sitting there chewing up
extra data. Like a Cradle Point or something like that.
And he's using either Cradle Point and Microtech routers everywhere, and he knows how to make them work all that. Yeah,
and the newer Microtechs actually will support native LTE, so you can plug a USB 4G in, and it will take that as a
And that's cool. That's kind of the thing as tech guys. You know, we need to help management and some of the older tech guys get over, because the minute you hear I'm going to put your radio station on over the public internet, are certainly not going to be doing that.
Yes,
but in reality, as you said, it's gotten better and better, and if you plan correctly. That's the key, is it does require a little bit extra planning. But if you can do that, that's certainly, especially now we're having issues with siting microwave lengths, even getting them coordinated anymore.
Mm-hmm.
More and more we're having to move to those solutions. So, you need to be thinking outside of that box, looking at solutions like multiple point network connections, zips, some people use barracks, not a fan of those, but they work.
Mm-hmm.
And things like shoutcast on transmitters and those sorts of things. And, sometimes the answer is a combination of those things. I think, once you get your head around audio over IP in that general sense, not necessarily LiveWire per se, but as part of that mixture of that, the entire solution, all of a sudden those answers become more and more clear and you go, oh, why couldn't we do that? I know a few people who are doing LiveWire over the Ubiquiti links.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, they're LiveWire from beginning to end.
Yeah.
I
got three such links, two in the Mississippi and one in American Samoa, and they work great.
And the added benefit of that is that flexibility that gives you.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I was doing was I have a two channel 950 megahertz SCL 4 channel. So I got two stereo pairs going to an auxiliary site. Well, one of those transmitters does two different programs. Well, I can use my node, the switching inside of the node, to switch the feed to that.
Mm-hmm.
So, the secondary channel needs to switch between two stations.
Right.
I used to have this convoluted silent sensing switcher thing. It's all done in IP now. So, once you start to look at that as a beginning and end solution that all works together as a system, all of a sudden it starts to make sense. And, those constraints that we artificially place on ourselves go away.
Are you doing that switching with Pathfinder?
Yes.
Okay. Because now my little stations, we can't afford Pathfinder.
There's that new freeware
that does switching. Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, you can go in and type, or click, click, click. But if you can, but a disc jockey can't do that.
Right.
So I have this little app that's available. A guy in Australia wrote this little app that just addresses a single output on a node, and you can make as many input buttons selection possibilities as you want, and you've got a little router
and,
there.
And the other thing we're doing with Pathfinder and Telos makes, Axie makes the button bars.
Oh, yeah.
The push buttons.
Yeah.
So what we can do is we can assign different studios to different things. So in an emergency, they can press a button, which takes our automation system, feeds it directly to the node, feeding the transmitter, bypassing everything.
And that's all happening over LiveWire.
And that's all happening over LiveWire.
Wow.
Yeah. Or even something as simple as silent sensing. So, there's silent sensing ability built into Pathfinder and nodes. So I have in each of my studios, I have a 5-button LED panel with my four stations lit in green. If one of the stations goes silent after 30 seconds, that green light starts flashing red.
Ah.
All of that is completely LiveWire.
Can we switch topics? Can I ask you guys about audio processing?
Absolutely. Sure. Yeah, this would be a good time. We'll take a break in about 5 minutes, but yeah, go ahead.
So the I know that Telos has come out with the new Omnia. What was the red one?
The Volt.
Yeah. Omnia Volt. So one of the things that we had looked at is that designed to be a audio processor that you would put inside of a studio?
Well, of course, it's got audio ins and audio outs, and it's got the hardware to do an FM out, mm-hmm. and you can load different firmwares into it for free. So if you need an FM processor, mm-hmm. and typically it would need to go at your transmitter site, but that depends on what kind of link you have between.
Sure.
But in many cases, it would need to go at the transmitter site, and it would have FM audio processing in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I sense that maybe this would be a good time to explain this to you. You know, we do audio processing that is tailored for the transmission medium,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So if we're going to do processing for an AM station, it's going to be different than for an FM station.
Gotcha. And different yet for a stream then.
Different for a stream. Exactly. For a stream, our concern there is that we want to make everything smooth, but we also want to make it easy for the encoder to be efficient.
Sure.
So we get the best sound.
So for example, if you're using, you know, a 64K sample rate, you may have a hard roll-off low-pass filter at 32K
mm-hmm.
to get rid of the sloshing S's that are inherent in codecs.
Yeah.
So, and that's the same if you're getting an HD radio, the same processing theory behind that. In fact, a lot of times for HD sub-channels, actually streaming processing works very well for
yes,
that.
That's what you want to use, not FM processing. Yeah. Exactly. So, yeah, your Volt, if you have an FM station, mm-hmm. you put the FM software into it. If you want to use the Volt to process your stream, you mm-hmm. certainly can, although the ZipStream software has built-in processing
yeah. okay.
and optionally Omnia 9 processing. You can pay an extra money for and get the Omnia 9 processing,
okay.
Which in either case will cost you less than a Volt. But you can still use a Volt if you want to process for your stream.
So if I wanted a hardware device, and let's say I wanted to apply the processing to a recording, I was recording off air,
oh,
and so it was going to be recorded, would the Volt be a good choice for something like
well,
that?
Well, you could, but I kind of got to ask why. Why do you want to process for recording? You said off air. You mean actually off the received air or off the automation system?
Right. So for example, if I was spending I do a weekly talk show,
yeah,
and that would be on me to purchase that equipment, and I can't just go to the transmitter site and just install this audio processor. But one thing that dawns on me is, could I improve the audio of a pre-recorded show using an audio processor?
Okay.
No.
Well,
no.
Well,
okay. Let me
go ahead.
Let me back out, because this is a near and dear.
So make sure we're clear. You pre-record a show, mm-hmm. and you want to know if you can process that show so it will sound better on the air.
Exactly.
Right. Okay.
Okay. So let me back that up. No.
Okay.
And,
all right.
And here's why. Audio processing is often addition by subtraction. So if you look at, in a nutshell, when you look at audio processing, it's always about gain reduction. So an audio processor starts at zero gain reduction.
Okay.
You feed audio into it. It brings the gain of all those bands down and then amplifies it on the back end to go. In order for that to work, it needs to have changes in audio levels in order to do its thing. If you do that job before it does, it doesn't do anything. So,
gotcha.
You know, for example, I know some production guys who love to go, ooh, I'm going to crank the bass up because it's going to sound really good in my monitors. Then then it goes through the audio processing, and what does it do? It turns down the bass channel.
And, sure. and what happened to my production?
Removes the bass.
Yeah,
right?
Okay.
So, you know, you may want to do like an easy kind of a leveling thing. There's a box called Compeller by Aphex, which works really well for that.
Yeah.
That just basically is a very smooth, slow-moving gain controller that smooths out the bumps.
Sure. Okay. So I'll give us a similar but a little bit different perspective than Chris is. A lot of radio stations, a lot of LPFMs, mm-hmm. a lot of college radio stations have to set up their processing to be very wide-ranging on its input because they play a variety of different music styles. They have some disc jockeys that run the meters like this, others that run the meters like this.
Sure.
And so it's got to be very wide-ranging. We've got a guy, by the way, at Omnia, Mark Manolio, and he's an expert at helping you set up processing for a station with a variety of programming styles
okay.
and a variety of people running the board.
Sure.
So anyway, for a show that you pre-produce, mm-hmm. what you really want, you don't really want that to sound processed. What you
gotcha.
Want it to do is present always a nice, reasonable level, balanced highs and lows, to the existing processor.
Gotcha.
Now, there, if you, what software do you use to produce the show?
So it's the recorded in Audacity.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. Mm-hmm. So Audacity has some built-in audio processing in it, mm-hmm. right? Now, I've used Audacity plenty. I've used Adobe Audition plenty. Mm-hmm. I'm not a huge fan of the audio processing that's built into either one of them
okay.
because it's very mathematical. It's not designed by a sound designer.
Yeah, right.
Very mathematical, not very musical. Whereas audio processing in an Omnia product, with which I'm familiar, of course, tens, maybe hundreds of thousands of hours have gone into listening to the hardest to process cymbal hit in a Shania Twain song and make it sound good coming out.
Sure.
So the point here is I would use the processing in Audacity, but I would use it gently. Just make it, don't squash stuff.
Yeah.
Just make it so that your levels are nice and good.
As I like to tell my production people, let my $10,000 audio processor do its job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there you go.
Yeah. My $10,000 audio processor does way better than your software.
Now, what you don't want is 30 decibel swings between your hottest and your lowest. You want to get your production values good, but you really don't have to pre-process to any extent other than you might normalize, which normalizing doesn't change the processing.
Right.
It just gives the peaks to be all the same level. Yeah. I usually, when I do audiobooks, and the idea there is to sound natural but also be audible in a moving car, for example.
Yeah.
So you want to have a little bit of processing in there. So I just apply some basic voice processing to and if you took my audiobook recording and you ran it through an FM audio processor, it would sound fine because it's not over-processed to begin with. It's
gently processed. Just like processing for audio streaming, you know, you need to have some dynamic range to let the equipment do its job.
Sure.
Hey, it's break time. Do you don't have a Telus VX at your station, do you?
Yes.
You do?
Yes.
Would you help me do a spot?
I certainly can help you do a spot.
Noah, thank you so much, sir.
I appreciate the knowledge that you're both sharing with me.
And if you would swap your headphone here with Mr. Persons,
yes, sir,
or maybe he'll just walk right over with his headphone. All right, Chris, let's stand up here for a minute because last week I got to go to WSB Television in Atlanta, Georgia. Maybe you saw the video on Facebook. I don't know.
No.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I see your videos.
Sorry. So what I found out was TV stations have a challenge that radio stations don't, and that is they have all these remote trucks and I thought just the reporters needed IFB, but boy, was I wrong.
Oh, no. Yeah.
The photogs need IFB. If there is a truck producer or a truck operator, that person needs IFB. And a big TV station like WSB Television in Atlanta, they got 12 trucks.
You're right.
And between 4 p.m. and 7 p.m. in that news block, when there are probably 2.5 hours of local news and a half hour of network, believe me, the money people want all 12 of those trucks to get used.
There's a lot going on. Yeah.
So they even have positions in the TV station that handle nothing but the incoming remotes and get them coordinated for going to the production control room.
Sure.
Oh, my goodness. It's so much more than I thought.
Yeah. It's more than just pictures.
Well, what they're doing is and in a minute I want you to tell me how you're using your VX, but at WSB Television, they can use their VX to put a VIP caller on there. Typically, the mayor may call the TV station. You guys got the story all wrong. I want to have my say. Well, okay, well, we'll put you on. And they forward it from their Cisco business phone system to the VX. And then on the VX, they put it actually into their Klotz routing system.
Sure.
And then they go do a phoner with the mayor or whoever it may be. But that's just a small use. The main use is reporters call in. And they all just have one speed dial. And it hits an Asterisk PBX first.
Sure.
The Asterisk PBX announces to the reporter, you are channel 4329, whatever it is. I don't know why it's important that the reporter knows that, but it does. Then, without going through the whole story, bottom line is the director, the producer, the news assignment editor, the incoming truck, that producer, they can push a button on their telex intercom and talk to exactly the right person or the right group of people. They used to have a wall of auto couplers, right?
Right.
Then they got rid of those and got a huge rack of CircuitWorks brand auto couplers. Lots of POTS lines.
Oh, yeah.
$3,000 a month in POTS lines.
Crazy, yeah.
And now $300 a month in it's actually a PRI that they're using.
Right.
PRI comes into the Asterisk. It does its magic there. It's broken out for the VX.
Sure.
And then the VX is what connects it all to the Telex intercom and the Klotz router.
Yes.
And it's amazing. I was just flabbergasted as to how well it works, how it saves money.
Yeah, they're really stretching that out.
And how much they do with it.
Sure.
So that's my story about VX in a television application. In fact, this is part of what my colleague Martin Deister is going to be talking about here in a couple of days.
Great.
So
awesome.
That's my story. Tell me about your story on VX.
In a radio situation, you can do similar things, especially we have a sports talk station, which requires a lot of calling in by guests and reporters in the field.
Okay.
And so what we can do is we can do a direct SIP connection, wideband codec, through an app. So we just do a direct SIP connection to the VX on a special number that we have set up.
Well, this is using the G722 codec?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
And basically what we can do is we can preset that application where it's just one button. And so we can give it to somebody in the field and go, okay, when you're ready to call in, open this app, press this button, and it's going to, on our side, we're going to know it's you, we're going to put you on, and away we go. So it makes that, you know, we've started using that for remotes too, like for an iRig where you put it into your iPhone and it breaks out at a microphone and headset.
Yes.
And again, you just one button and boom, there you go. So, you know, we're a little not as far down the line as some of these places are, but, you know, we're just starting to scratch the surface on, you know, especially doing SIP because it's been such, I think for broadcasters especially, other than just using it for phone calls, it's kind of a foreign concept still. And, you know, the great thing about SIP is SIP isn't a codec. SIP is the method of connection.
It
makes making those connections so much easier.
And that's why SIP is session initiation protocol.
Right.
So it starts the session and negotiates the codecs. In this case, you're negotiating G722. That's what you want. I got a couple of questions.
Sure.
Now, G722, you mentioned the sports station. Mm-hmm. Great for voice, not appropriate for a concert.
Right.
Right. Okay.
Well, generally, if you're doing a concert, you're probably not going to do that over
the phone.
VoIP connection.
Okay. The other question was, when you're doing this from the remote site, mm-hmm. you're using your data plan on your phone.
Correct.
Only at about, I think, a 64 kilobit audio results in about 90 kilobits of data.
It just
data. So that's my question. Do you get dropouts? Does it tend to be pretty reliable?
It's pretty robust.
Yeah.
And you know, keeping in mind nowadays that, for example, T-Mobile, you and I both have that.
Yeah.
That's Volte. I mean, Volte is basically, you know, using the data connection.
Voice over
for
LTE.
Phone calls. Right.
Yeah.
It's using that for data calls or for voice calls, rather.
Okay.
So it's they're already there. Way now. Right.
They're already there.
Yep. And so we're just having to get there. Okay. And again, it was a conversation we were just having about, you know, convincing the non-tech people. Well, we're not using a cell phone for a broadcast. That's awful. You know, it's like, well, no, it's not really. You know, I mean, it really is pretty good. And especially now, you know, again, with wideband codecs and everything else, you know, the data network on the cell service is already there, especially for low bandwidth, things like that.
Yeah. Perfect. And it's only going to get better. It's only going to get better.
Right.
Hey, let's bring Mark Persons in. Can you stick a few more minutes or do you need to
leave?
Sure.
No, I'm good.
Mark, if you could get over here, I'm going to remind our friends about what we've just been talking about.
With you?
The Telos VX. It's a multi-line, multi-studio phone system from Telos. My goodness. And you know what? If you don't need the full capabilities of the VX, if you don't need that many studios, then check out the VX Prime. And whether you're a radio station or a TV station, you can find terrific ways to put this to use and get a great return on investment because it can pay for itself with much lower cost SIP VoIP phone lines. Check it out on the website. We got some videos there. We talk about it. We have some white papers and booklets you can download. Good information. Thanks a lot, Telos Alliance, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Mark, come on in. And y'all decided to do-si-do a bit.
Yep.
Okay, good.
Okay.
Are we all in the shot? Yeah, we are.
It's a Mark Persons sandwich.
Okay, here's...
Mark Persons, our friend.
I brought up something of interest here, which you might want to see.
This is a danger
sign. and for those who know Ohm's Law, Ohms are really dangerous things, you understand.
Oh, my goodness.
20 million ohms. Watch yourself.
So I guess I could make one of those up. Where'd you get that?
Well, actually, I got it at Fair Radio Sales in Lima, Ohio, on my way to the Ham Fest last spring, the Dayton Ham Fest. But that's a minor point. So anyway, I'm enjoying being here because I learn a lot at this conference.
Yeah.
And a couple of the things that I learned was something I didn't know, and that is that the Tesla car doesn't have a radio at this time.
What?
Yeah, they don't have. They won't. Aren't planning an AM radio.
All the noise from the
because of the noise from the electrical noise.
I turned that down too much. Let me turn.
But the other side of it is that they do have an FM radio that they think might be activated in the future.
Okay.
But here's the surprising part about the car, and that is that it has no dashboard, as in speedometer and all of that. It's got what I think they described as a 15-inch computer monitor.
Yeah, I've sat in one, yeah.
And all the information can be displayed there. The software can change it to be anything they want it to be.
But it's between... It's
in the center.
So you're driving down the road like this. Yeah. I'm not comfortable with that.
Well, what about the passenger?
I've been in a car with you. That's typically how you drive. So, you know, it's really not any different for you.
Yeah, right. Okay.
So what about the passenger? A passenger could enjoy it just as much.
Sure. Well, the passenger's going to be busy screaming as the car is careening down the road.
Careening down the road.
So did you get to ride in one yet?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
No.
Chris, you got to ride in a Tesla yet?
I have not. No.
And so somehow I lucked into getting a ride in Las Vegas from a Telos party back to my hotel room from some dude who friend of Telos. And so the thing is so quiet and it has so much torque. Oh my God.
Oh yeah.
So you just go and you don't hear a motor going. No, right. It's just like, that's it. Just amazing.
No, but I got to ride in a Black Hawk helicopter the other day.
That's much cooler.
At a military reservation.
Wow.
So it was a kind of a promotion to radio stations, and my name was on the list for radio, and so they let me take a ride. It was great.
So you got a list here of stuff. So what else is on your list?
Oh, okay. There was a presentation today, and in there was a studio, there was an announcer, and there were two computer monitors. Okay. Remember that one? What was missing from the equation?
There was no console.
That's right.
Ah, okay.
It was a bare tabletop.
Yep.
And maybe he had a pencil and paper there, but that was about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the console was missing.
Yeah. We used AutoMix.
What talk about the next level of, oh my gosh, who would have thought of that?
Yeah.
So that was my big surprise today.
Well, you know what? We won't need the console. We don't need a transmitter. It'll just, you know, magically appear somewhere. And it's amazing. You know, the one thing I noticed, and in fact, I kind of had a joke going back and forth with a friend of mine here. I said, so when do we do the session on tuning your PA section for, you know, max, you know, whatever, for best efficiency? It's all IP today. And I mean, that's good. It's interesting how times have changed even in the past 15 years. That I've been coming to this, how, you know, today's sessions were all, you know, essentially all IP. There was one session this morning about AM, which was fascinating. But one of the things they talked about was turning in your AM license. So, you know, it's just, it's been a little interesting, that kind of paradigm shift where, you know, when these sessions first started, you know, it really was, in fact, the history of this program was it was the FM broadcasters clinic for the FM network for the state's public broadcasting system.
Okay.
I remember when my hair was still brown that I'd come to these things, and the big thing was, hey, look at this brand new audio console.
Right.
Wow, look at that.
You know, but it is in that spirit. I mean, that, you know, even today, the spirit is still, we're learning these new things.
And you're saying that today, the new thing is, wow, look at that. There's no audio console.
Right. Yeah, that's it.
It went from, look at this RCA console. There's nothing there. Look at that. You know, so I did. I made a joke about, what point do we talk about PA neutralization?
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I think that is what makes this conference so great, is that we're not stuck with that. You know, we're always kind of looking forward and having these just very fascinating programs like you're talking about with the concert.
Yeah. So I've learned something every time.
Well, Noah was doing something, doing the radio station in the cloud. And I don't know how sophisticated that is at the moment, whatever he's doing. But and he told me the name of it. I just can't remember what it was right now. I'll have to ask him later. But I've envisioned this for a while now. I'm sure a lot of us have thought about what would it be like to have the whole station in the cloud, except, of course, microphones and headphones at the studio. We still need to create some content, some local talk, some people come by or comes by, whatever. And so we have, you know, some basic either control service or not.
Let's take that one step further. Yeah. Why do you need a studio?
So where do you do
it from? Why can't your studio be wherever you're at?
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah. Good point.
We used to do that with Marty. We brought broadcast transmitters.
But now
you're still, you know, how many of those come across your bench now with Marty?
So in the cloud, we still have to have probably more than just a simple automation. We need ways to get voice tracking to come in as long as we do voice tracking. We need to have automatic ways to do that. We can do that now in our own stations. We have ways to get that done, get the remote talents voice tracks merged in, you know, level set, put in, named right. We also have EAS to worry about. Mm-hmm. So that may be a little bit of a challenge.
You're going to have a static transmitter site. That's where the EAS goes. Solves that problem.
But you could also stream the LP1 station and the weather to your radio station in the cloud and have it take over there, I suppose.
You could. Sure. I mean, you know, I think that adds some probably complexity that you really don't have to have. But, you know, that's, again, where, you know, I love these sessions because it brings these kind of conversations out.
Yeah.
You know, where you start going, well, if you could do that, why don't you do this and take it one step further?
Wow. So what else is on your list?
Oh, that's all I got, except that we're only one day into the conference. Ask me next time we talk. I'll have more for you.
No, I mean, it is, one of the reasons I love coming is for that reason. I mean, it's not, we're not stuck talking about, you know, typical analog transmission, typical consoles. We occasionally have those discussions, but every year, you know, we've stayed ahead of the curve with a lot of these lessons. And so even a kind of a younger guy like me who got into this through IT I'm still going, wow, that's some amazing stuff.
So tonight at 7 p.m., Tony Peterly is doing a session about SNMP.
He's doing the Plug Fest.
The Plug Fest. Now, Chris, I'm still the same SNMP idiot I was 4 years ago.
Now I'm all SNMP.
And you're all SNMP. Yeah. What are we going to learn tonight from Tony?
Well, I think one of the things that, you know, we're working on still is there's still some compatibility with SNMP. It's still kind of the Wild West. And so, for example, MIBs are often written different ways. Sort of have to use MIB browsers, and it's not real intuitive. So I think that is part of what this discussion is going to be about and why we're having a Plug Fest. I do think that, you know, and again, he's also demoing his new remote control system that they're making that connects actually to the, if anybody's familiar with the ARC-16, the Burke systems.
Yeah.
His new remote control has a built-in interface that uses those relay panels so you don't have to rewire your equipment.
Oh,
but also adds SNMP so that you can talk to other equipment. But, you know, as I was mentioning not too long ago, I put in a new Burke ARC Plus with the SNMP license, put in a new Nautel. I don't have any remote control wiring. It's all over the wire.
Oh, my God. Over network wire.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Because once you have a device that talks SNMP, you can turn it on and off, get readings, alarms, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But again, trying to find where those MIB files live and what they're supposed to do. And Nautel's very good about being very descriptive with their, their SNMP commands, but they're kind of rare that way.
Gone are the days of pulling 50-pair unshielded cables in and 25-pair shielded cables in everywhere on punch blocks. My, how the world has changed.
It has. And in a lot of ways, for the better, I think in a lot of ways, there are still downsides. You know, for example, if you lose, I had a situation with this with SNMP where I lost my network switch.
Oh.
Well, now I have no control over anything.
Oh.
Because remote control, I can call the remote control. All it's telling me is that there's no data because it can't pull anything. So you have to think now a little bit further through because now I'm going, well, now I need to make sure I've got a UPS on that network switch and I've got a spare one there. And, you know, because I didn't think about that before until this failure happened. I went, it never occurred to me the network switch wouldn't work. So it does add, it's such a paradigm shift that you have to get your head around with these things.
At least with some of this, a lot of this networking stuff, like a network switch, a lot of them are commodity priced.
They are. Yeah.
If it's for AOIP, maybe you do need.
They're a lot more expensive.
A more expensive switch. Or if you're going to do a PoE switch.
Right.
More expensive.
I mean, SNMP is all very low data rate. I mean, you can throw pretty much anything in there and be okay.
SNMP has been around forever.
It has, right.
Like 25 years
and,
or something?
In radio, we're just now discovering that. I mean, that's been in the server world, in the IT world. That's been around forever.
Oh, wow.
It's just now finally getting to broadcast.
And it's new to and me, so I'm looking forward to the 7 p.m.
I can create – I have a display in my office that shows all of the, you know, forward power meters of all my transmitter sites across the state, along with all of their alarms, a picture of each one. Because I've got video at each one.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Plus, because it's all SNMP, I can bring in, I have separate boxes that do temperature. And I bring those in, and I have the temperature inside of each room and every, you know. So you can take all of these separate devices, pull them together into one display with SNMP.
Wow.
It's great.
I'm so looking for, I got to figure this out because I got sites that need this. I'm sorry, what else are you going to say?
Oh, well, I was going to say, I remember seeing SNMP on a Best UPS. Well, Best hasn't been in business for 20 years or more, but they were pretty smart in that I walked into a radio station the other day, and I heard this Morse code, da-da-da-dit, and I thought, where's that coming from? Hello? Hello? There was the Best UPS giving me the letter B for battery. It needed a new battery.
I love it.
Oh, my goodness. So we have Morse code and SNMP in
the
same box.
Right, well, you know, I mean, now all we need to do is do remote control over, you know, over Morse codes.
Or smoke signals.
Yeah.
Actually, some remote control is smoke. So if you see smoke from the transmitter site,
then
that's
you know
your signal.
That's a signal that there's something wrong.
That's
correct.
Right. Hey, guys, we're going to come back in a minute and tip of the week. Can each of you come up with a
tip of the week? Oh, my gosh. Okay.
You can do that.
Okay.
Our show this week in Radio Tech, number 368, live from Madison, Wisconsin, at the Broadcasters Clinic here from the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host, along with Chris Tarr, and also Mark Persons is here in this segment of the show. And our show is brought to you in part by our friends at Lavo, LAWO.com. And they're the ones, they did the thing this morning, right, on the AutoMix?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So Lavo has this AutoMix function. We've been talking about that actually here on our show for a couple of years now. If you go to the website, lavo.com/twirt, that's LAWO.com/TWIRT to take you right to the radio section. And if you click on the Ruby console, that's one of the items in their radio section, you'll see all about the new Ruby mixing console. Radio never looked so good, and here's why. The Ruby console is easy for the DJs to use. They can focus on producing their content, producing their show, without worrying about all the stuff under the hood. But if you want to worry about the stuff under the hood, if you want to make some really custom changes, if you want to set up a terrific auto mix, for example, that touchscreen will help you do that too. It's got a touchscreen that lets you get under the hood, lets you get in there to all the fine settings and set it up exactly the way you want it. The Ruby console uses a beautiful one rack unit DSP box with your inputs and outputs. Of course, you can get Ravenna with AES-67 compatibility on it. You can get dual power supplies, and it's built like all the Lavo gear. It is really bulletproof. It's over-engineered in Germany, where they over-engineer everything. And if you want about Lavo reliability, well, it's used at the BBC, at CBC in Canada, at NPR, and for big events like the World Cup and the Olympics. You're going to find Lavo consoles in all those situations. So if you would, check it out. The Ruby console, they're very proud of it, and I think you're going to like it too. If this concept in running a radio station appeals to you, like AutoMix, well, check that out. Go to Lavo, LAWO.com/twirt, T-W-I-R-T. That'll let them know that you heard about it right here on This Week in Radio Tech. Thanks again, Lavo, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, guys, we're going to do a tip of the week. And okay. You got
to
pass along?
Yeah. I always carry a toolkit with me. In this case, my wife and I came, so that toolkit with soldering iron and all my tools wound up in her car. Darned if it doesn't get used. I'm a guy who works with his hands, and you'd be amazed at the number of times I go out, I'll be right back, I got the tool to fix it. Honest to gosh, it gets used. And here's the deal. If I didn't take it one day, I'd really need it then.
Oh, my gosh.
So, that's my tip of the week.
And is this a big toolbox, a mini toolbox? What do you
have? It's what's called a lineman's toolbox. So, let's see. It's this, I'd say it's this wide and this deep. and about that thick.
Yeah.
Okay. And it opens, the lid lid opens, and all the tools are there. And then there's a lid that flips up inside, and then I've got more tools underneath, including the soldering iron that goes into a it's a copper sleeve, so I can take a hot soldering iron, throw it in there.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Close the kit, run out the door. People accused me of, you know, trying to make a quick escape this way, you see.
Oh, yeah.
but I always reminded them that I have a tail light warranty on my work. It's good as long as
it's good until you can't see the taillights.
As long as they can see the taillights, that's right.
Goodness. Oh, my goodness. That's good. That's good. It sounds like you've got a toolbox made by Platt.
I don't know. It was a telephone lineman's kit.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Okay, but you can buy them.
Yeah. I've had this Platt tool case cost $110 back in the late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have it. It works great. It hasn't torn up. It's just terrific.
I started with one darn near 40 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm on my third one. Oh, I wear them out.
You do.
And it's great.
My tip of the week,
yes, sir,
is if you hire Mark to do work, put in speed bumps in your driveway. it's actually not really a broadcast. It's not really a broadcast tip, but it's an IT tip. Mm-hmm. I went to it wasn't this hotel, but I was on vacation recently. Went to a hotel where they had the old network jacks for your internet.
Uh-huh.
So what they did is they were sneaky. They gave you one MAC address. And then after that, if you plugged in any other devices, they charged you extra.
Oh.
I always bring with me a little wireless router that you can plug in.
Yes.
That actually has a web page so that you can sign in using the router, sign into their network.
I see.
To authorize the device. And then I had Wi-Fi all over and hooked up everything I wanted to. So, these things are like $50 at Amazon. Go look them up. They are fantastic.
Cool. Do you have a brand name or?
They're generic. So generic, they're branded by everybody.
Like a travel router.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Okay.
Yep.
Cool. Awesome. Steve, we were just doing a tip of the week to close the show out. And, with all that you deal with wire and cable, I thought you might have a tip to leave our listeners.
Yeah. Go fiber.
Go fiber.
Copper is not dead. That's what I was going to say, actually. So, yeah. That's a tough one. I mean, there's so many places to take that.
Yeah. Should I invest in copper at this point?
Well, when they said there was going to be a paperless society, that's when you buy a paper mill.
Right.
Yeah. There you go.
And it's true. I know this guy who, when they said we're getting out of lead because lead's dangerous and everything, he bought up all the lead mines that he could find in the world. He is now a multimillionaire. And on his yacht, it says ingot. that's the name of the yacht.
Wow.
So this is my suggestion. When people say something's dead, that's when you buy it.
All right.
There you go.
Right. So coax isn't dead, and neither is twisted pair, obviously.
Right. Or paper.
Yeah, or paper. That's true. Hey, this has been This Week in Radio Tech. We're live in Madison, Wisconsin at the Broadcasters Clinic from the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association. We've had a great time, and I'm glad you could join us. Next week we'll be in New York City at the AES convention. Not sure what we're going to do. We'll figure it out. It's going to be good no matter what it is, and I'm sure that Chris Tobin and other luminaries will be with us on that date as well. Thanks to all of you for being here.
Yeah.
Mark, Christopher, thank you so much.
You got it.
And Steve.
Pleasure.
And thanks a lot to Suncast, our producer, back at headquarters in New York. And thanks also to Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network. I'm Kirk Harnack. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye, everybody.